Now, here in New Mexico, somewhat to the shock of the business community and different lobbies here in the state, our governor opened up the legislative session this week by saying that he's in support of a $7.50 overall raise in the minimum wage here in New Mexico across the state. We have our own Santa Fe ordinance. And while we're out there fighting for minimum wage increases and living wages out there, CEO salaries are still in the multi-million dollars with incentive packages. How do CEOs get so much? And in your opinion, Chuck, after in the wake of Enron and corporate scandal, are you seeing any improvement into the scrutiny put into this type of CEO compensation?
Well, right now, just so we get the picture, the average CEO salary is about 400 times the average worker income in the United States. It's sort of approaching the $10 million mark, and you still have some CEOs pulling in salaries of $150 million, $200 million a year, if you include all their perks and packages. So I think there is actually growing shareholder, growing consumer, growing worker critical perspective on this. People are even the Securities and Exchange Commission is just announced this week that they're going to require even more disclosure, more information about the nature of pay packages. So there's a lot of scrutiny, and there's really no moral or economic justification for it. So it's starting to wear thin. And, you know, I think that the trend that you're describing in New Mexico is interesting, that a lot of states, part of it's that the federal minimum wage is sort of stalled out, that because of the conservative Congress, you know, we have this, the $5.15 an hour minimum wage. It hasn't changed since 1997. So states are starting to take up the question of should we raise the state minimum wage. Municipalities are looking at living wage ordinances. All of this is partly because any kind of meaningful reform is blocked at the federal level. But in a way, there's kind of a movement, an undercurrent across the country of people making the moral and economic case. You know, it's really not bad. It's not bad for the economy to raise the minimum wage. It has all kinds of positive effects on the economy, including for small businesses that get to compete not based on low wages, but based on services and being able to pay and retain quality workers. So it's not the sort of end of the world as some people seem to think it is. It's actually part of a healthy economy.
Why do you see the Walton family giving away these hundreds of millions of dollars out there as not such a great thing?
You know, throughout our history, there have been these enormous fortunes that have been given to charity, and some of them have done, you know, very, very good things. So it's sort of a mixed bag. My concern is that concentrations of wealth are concentrations of power. So we might even say, well, wasn't it great that John D. Rockefeller gave all this money and property to create the national park system, or that the Gateses have created a foundation that funds, you know, healthcare in around the world? These are, you know, excellent philanthropic endeavors. But it still concerns me that so few people would have so much power. And in the case of the Waltons, how they're using their money. You know, in a couple of years, the Waltons will become the biggest foundation. When Helen Walton dies, her intent is to put money into the Walton Family Foundation, and the children also say that they're going to give substantial amount of money. So, you know, in 10 years, you have the biggest foundation in the country will be the Waltons. What is it that they fund? They fund education privatization, a tax on public education, and they're zealots when it comes to the whole issue of vouchers in education. That's a lot of money from one family going to support one particular agenda or way of organizing things. And that's just a big, heavy, fat thumb on the scale of democracy. That's just too much power for one family. So I would argue whether it's you know, George Soros funding liberal causes or the Waltons funding conservative causes, I don't like it either way. I don't like to see so few people have so much power.
So in the terminology of, you know, Reaganomics 101, the idea of trickling down through the economy really just holds power in one place. Trickling down gives those who have the money all of the power to trickle the money down into the places of their choosing.
Yeah, I mean, it's the power of their philanthropy. It's the power of their political contributions. You know, it was 100 years ago when Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis said, you can have concentrated wealth in the hands of a few, or you can have democracy, but you can't have both. And that's where we are today. We have enormous concentrations of wealth. I mean, our country fought a revolution to throw off an aristocracy. We don't want to have kings and queens governing us. But the reality is we now have these enormous corporations, a couple hundred big corporations, and 30, 40 enormously wealthy families that are kind of our new plutocrats, our new aristocracy. And our whole society and culture and media and economy are oriented towards, you know, their desires and needs. That's not a healthy thing for a self-governing society like ours.
Well, but we do put the good face on when Tom DeLay and Jack Abramoff have their dirty little secrets pulled out of the closet. Everybody tries to distance themselves. How much of this, and is this part of this inequality? Is this lobbying scandal in Washington and the Abramoffs of the world and their golf trips and the like part of this institutionalized inequality?
It is, because, and if you look at 100 years ago, it was the other period of great corruption in our democracy. You know, you had the shame of the Senate. You had senators bought and paid for by the large trusts, the large corporate interests at the time. And you had a Congress, and again, talking 100 years ago, that completely blocked any kind of meaningful reforms. You know, people were clamoring for child labor laws. People were clamoring for adequate housing, sanitation in cities. The most minimal of social reforms were blocked by this corrupt Congress. And in fact, it was a time when the states undertook a lot of innovation to address problems in the society. Here we are again, 100 years later, big money controls things. And the Abramoff and these scandals, I mean, this is not alarming. This is just what happens when there's so much money sloshing around influencing our democratic system. And, you know, you can say, well, these guys broke a few rules, but it's no secret. The whole system is now corrupted by money. And that's a function of this concentration, this maldistribution of wealth and power. So what's on the agenda in Washington? Is what's on the agenda, how are we going to broaden wealth and opportunity for working class people? No. It's how do we get rid of the inheritance tax? It's an agenda driven by the interests of the wealthy and the big corporations. So, you know, if societies that have less inequality have less corruption. And our society historically, when there's been less corruption, have been times when there's been relatively great equality.